Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome all again to another episode of the Head of Households Virtual Call for Men. We bring you the best in topics that help us men continue to keep our marriages and relationships together. And tonight is no different. Please check out our updated website at any time at www.householdstress.com. It actually has a new background page, wallpaper page, and it looks pretty good. So if y'all get a chance to look at it, go check it out. Fellas, few rules. No cursing. Respect each other on the call. And it's okay to agree to disagree. And for all of our new callers and chatters, please jump in at any time. And for our regulars, well, you know what to do. Have fun. Our topic tonight, when you and your job get a divorce. Fellas, have you put your work at the top of the pedestal? Is your job the best thing you have? Has it taken over your life? Is this what you thought your life is going to turn out to be? Let's talk about it. Well, first thing I realized that I need to do, and one thing my mom or my grandma always was to say is when you need to learn know something and you don't know it, go to the dictionary first. So I went to look up job, thinking everybody knows what job is, right? But I didn't realize that job has so many different definitions. So I'm going to go over just a few. Just the nouns. I mean, they got verbs, and they got verbs with objects and adjectives and synonyms. And I was like, good Lord, I didn't know there was that many just for one word, job. Job, a piece of work, especially a specific task done as part as the routine of one's occupation or for an agreed price. A post of employment, full-time or part-time position. Anything a person is expected or obliged to do. Duty, responsibility. Example, it is your job to be on time. It is your job to be a father. It is your job to pay the bill. Do you get my drift? You see where this is going?
Yep.
Then you have a couple of verbs to work at jobs, odd pieces of work, work by the piece, do business as a jobber, to turn public business planning, et cetera, and property to private gain. So you get some type of gain out of this. And when I looked at some of these, and like I said, there's tons of them, I'm like, wow. It goes back to the questions I asked right at the beginning. I'll say them again. Fellas, have you put your work at the top of the pedestal? Is your job, now that we know the definition of job, the best thing you have?
No.
Have it taken over your life? Has your job, now that we know what the definition is, taken over your life? Is this what you thought your life is going to turn out to be?
Yes.
Let's talk about it. Well, one thing about talking about it is I need to tell my story. I think it's good for me. One, it helps me get it out and release because I want to tell you about what I'm going through right now. And you probably heard on a couple of other calls before. But, you know, I think this call is at my door house. It's already in my house sitting with me on the couch right beside me. And so, you know, I need y'all fellas to maybe come in and help me out. So here's my story right quick. My story is that I was born to a mother and father that both had an education. right? Both graduated from college. Everything, and my grandmother, both of my grandmothers on my mom and my father's side were teachers. Okay? So they instilled, you got to get a, and my grandfather was a entrepreneur. And so all of I've seen all my life is work. I never had to go for anything. So I'm a suburban kid, all right? I'm not a ghetto kid. I'm not a hood kid. I wasn't born there. I'm a suburban kid. My mom, as far as I know, has always had two jobs. My dad has always had two or three jobs.
All right? Wait, were they from Jamaica?
No.
I just asked. All jobs.
They were from Aruba.
Yeah. But, you know, they both country folks. They both came from, you know, nothing, if you can say. My dad was in the mountains, you know, and was one breadwinner, which was my grandma's. But, like, my grandfather, he was a factory worker. He didn't have an education. On the other side, you know, my grandfather, he didn't graduate from college. He did finish high school, but he was always working on the farm. And he started his own business. He built his business from scratch. My grandmama was a teacher. So I've always seen my folks go to work. But I also was a kid that was able to go to every – I've been to Minnesota. I've been to almost 48 of the 50 states in my lifetime, at some point in my life, because my parents always took a vacation and we always went somewhere, and then my grandmother always took us on a one-day tour to something for educational purposes. So we always knew we were hard workers. Right now I have an older sister. She has two jobs. She has a daughter going to graduate next week, and she's an entrepreneur. She has her own, she's a hairstylist. She's a beautician, so she has her own business. Where me, I'm the educated one. I graduated from college, and I got jobs. So you can kind of see how the pattern goes in my family. So I don't know anything less but working. And then my father and mother, they were volunteers. So they always volunteered for something. My mom's volunteering now for breast cancer. My dad volunteers at the homeless shelter. So this is my upbringing. So all I know is work. And when I got married and I brought in my wife, she had her job, but I always made sure that I was a breadwinner and that whenever we go through, I'm going to make sure I get that second job or to make sure we're comfortable. So when we bought our first house, I got a second job. When we moved, I got a second job. At one time, I took a third job, a weekend job, when I was doing newspapers in the middle of the night on the weekend, taking them to hotels, just so that we can survive. We moved up here to D.C. At one time, I took two jobs. I had my regular job, which is affordable, but when you put so much money down on one of these big old houses because you wanted your family to live in a certain area, you want your kids to go to a certain good school, you done did all the research, it costs more. Maybe a little bit more than what you have at that time. So what did I do? I took that risk and went out and said, well, I'll get another job. That left me away from home, right? Because I'm always working. And then once I got into church, I took on volunteering jobs there. So I'm always away from home. Almost like I'm on travel all the time. Even though I'm here at work. Well, because I've had this work ethic, my job has boomed. Let's just say in 2 years I became manager, now I'm engagement manager, now I'm project manager. I'm at that level. So the money is great, but it takes, you know, more initiative, more responsibilities. And I took this job where I'm at now which was the 24/7 job. And Ronnie knows, he see me with 2-3 phones on me. Even when we were doing these calls, I was working. I would wake up. I wouldn't go to bed until 2-3 in the morning, then wake up at 5 and start the day over again. So I was only really getting 2 hours of sleep for past 3 years. It's exhausting. But I think I put my work ethic in front of my family, because it went from 9 to 5 to now I'm at 22 hours a day. To me, in my mind, and this is where y'all could probably say, you crazy, it was what a man had to do to keep his family in straight, that they could have anything that they want, if they ask, I can provide them, you know, we got a good house. We're in a good neighborhood. My wife is close to her work. The kids are close to school.
But at the end of the day, is it worth the trade-off?
Right.
Right now, 3 years later, it was not worth the trade-off. And I'm just finding this out.
Because when you put all the toys back in the box at the end of the game, what are you left with?
The same rusty tools.
Okay. The time, you see, what you leave in your family is much more important than what you leave to them. And when you start to realize that, especially with your kids and also with your wife, but your kids are going to leave that house one day, and it's a very short time. Even though when they're young, you don't realize it that way. It's a blink of an eye, and that's it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then when they leave, since your life has been surrounded around work and then, you know, taking the kids and being a taxi, you won't have the relationship with your wife.
And there were times where my wife, bless her heart, she knows how I am and she knows the work ethic that I put in. She would stay up with me, sit right there on the couch and watch me do my work and wait for me to finish, and then we'll go to bed together. That's when we were just finishing, maybe I would finish around 12 or 1 in the morning. She would stay up with me. We would talk. I would do my work. We would talk. We would do my work. But that was our quality control time. It wasn't that I was putting all of my focus in there. She was just getting wherever gap that she could get in.
So she was
spend
playing
time with her husband.
So your job was your mistress.
Yeah, my job was my mistress.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, bro. If it takes you more than 40 hours a week, you're doing it wrong.
Say that. Yes, sir.
Life is too short.
Yeah. And it was weird, man. It was really weird. Because, one, at the beginning, when I first took this job, I had to rebuild an organization that was totally just out of whack from scratch. It was done wrong. The proficiency was only at 30%. And I had to, from scratch, literally put a plan together, put the processes together, design, plan, you know, put in play and make sure everything was together. And that took time. But it ended up working where, you know, the proficiency now of getting things done when I left last week was at 89%. And that was due to the fact that when they implemented a new component, that implementation team was done all wrong, and we had to take the hump of that. Because before that, I was at 97% when I finished in the year 2010. So, you know, and I got all the bonuses and all that good stuff from the company. But then the company starts looking at you different. It's like, oh, you did that great for me. Now what do you do for me lately?
How much do you really think they care about you?
They, as of 2 weeks ago, they cared nothing about
me. I'm going to tell you what, from the business owner standpoint, don't take this wrong, but you can be replaced.
But, I mean, basically, that's what happened. My job was ended, and they brought in two people to take a place of mine.
You're going to get too expensive for them to keep you.
Well, I was. Then that's what happened.
Okay.
Then that's what happened to them is that I got expensive, so they brought in two people to take over my one job. And the problem was, because I put job first, I went in the month of May. They told me the day after my birthday. My birthday was on a Sunday. No, it was on a Monday. I didn't go to work that day. I walked in a Tuesday, and they told me what was going on.
What did they say to you?
Well, they said that, you know, you've been doing this for 3 years. It has to be tiresome. It's burned out. I already knew there was going to be changes, but they told me to put a plan together to move some of the folks that were on my team to other positions, find them other positions, and then we're going to start rotating because they've been on the job for 3 years. Well, I'm thinking when I'm going in the meeting, they're going to say, all right, we taking your plan, and this is what's getting ready to happen. Well, they took that plan and voided that out and just said, well, there's not enough funding for you, so we're going to bring in two more people to take the job over that you were doing. And I wasn't any really mad. But then at work, I was
like,
all right.
Did they eliminate your position?
No, they just separated it to two lower positions.
So where does that leave you?
So that left me out with trying to find a job, which I'm doing right now.
So when is your contract up? Like officially, like when are you
the
done?
31st, but IBM is helping me look, and then I started looking outside of IBM too.
Do you know the difference between a recession and a depression?
Right now, I don't.
A recession is when your neighbor gets laid off.
Mm-hmm.
A depression is when you do.
Oh yeah. And right now, to be honest with y'all, I went straight into a depressed mode. Because I went into probably what a lot of other people that we've seen all over, and it even probably happened to ourselves once in our lifetime, where you put so much energy and work into your job that, like you said, that it's like, thank you, but now it's time to move on.
Yeah. And
like
it's
my
said,
tail, and you need to go, you know. You did a great job. You got your bonuses. You got all this stuff. But we're going a different direction.
Yeah, and like you said, you can be replaced. So I think that where you say you were depressed, it was because you cared more about them than they cared about you. And that was a mistake.
Right. So what ended up happening was, literally, they became my mistress, my family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like I let them down, even though I didn't. I felt like I let them down.
But how did that affect your familial relationship? Like,
well,
I'm going
to tell you how it affected my household.
Yeah.
I became a lazy bum. We talked about this about man, you know, the other week. So comes home, gets fired or whatever, and he does nothing. And the wife is taking over working. You know, she bring home the bills, she bringing home the bacon, all that. That didn't happen in my case, but I did get late. I got so mad, I just took all my suits out of the closet. And then and Sharon still left in there. And they and I said, well, my excuse was I'm going to take them and get dry clean, because they need dry clean. Some of them do. Well, the whole purpose was I really wanted to just throw them out the window and burn.
Burn the suits?
I just felt so insulted. That's real talk. Where you just feel so that you put so much emphasis into your job. I don't think I put the same emphasis in my job as I do my family. I did my family at that 3 years.
Yep.
And that's been the stressful part that I have figured out last week. That was so painful.
So when did you come to the realization that your job had taken the first priority, you know, over your wife and over your kids? Like, when did you actually come to that realization? At what point?
When I turned in that phone.
Which was
when? I gave up my phone.
When was that?
That was 2 weeks ago. On the 21st of May, I gave up them phones. And then it was, because even the first 2 weeks, me trying to help out, I just didn't walk away. I still sat over there. I got meetings. I set up meetings and brought the two guys in and said, here's what I've done. Here's the plan. Here's the team. Here's their weak point. It's like I knew everything about every person that was that walking into the room. And then after a while, I said, I'm not doing that. I mean, they're going to do it their way anyway. Why should I tell them what I did? Because, you know, anybody new comes in, they're going to do it their way anyway. They're not going to do it the exact same way I did it. And then once I got rid of that phone and I sat down and I got that desk and then I had nothing to do.
Mm-hmm. That's when it hit you.
That's when it hit me. It was like, man, I have nothing to do.
But how much time did you lose? I mean, how much, like you look at, you know, I'm talking about like family time.
Well, I'm going to tell you like this. I think I lost a lot, because another reason why I worked so hard to do it is because during the 2008-2009, where people were getting laid off, my wife got laid off her full-time job at the hospital. But they rehired her back part-time, but we lost that full-time benefits, her full-time funding. So of the household money was being used, because we had to use a little bit of our savings just so we can make sure we had to cut back on some bills, make sure we paid the others off. And then I got a tumor in my nose, which I still think came from working too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was more bills. Then popped up more bills. So it was like, all right, we get back stable, and then here you go again. Something else happened. Get back stable, all right, then now the kids, something else happened. And so every time something else happened, I would spend more time at work just so I could try to find another way to get another bonus, you know, spot bonus or whatever, so that I make sure we have enough money coming. And that was my way of thinking of keeping a balance home. Maybe I was thinking wrong.
I think in some respects you weren't. I mean, if you're when you had the opportunity to, you know, to get a bonus, you know, like that, you know, I think you should definitely be strategic about that. You know, if you definitely got some inconsistency as far as employment, So I don't think that's a bad thing. But, you know, again, I think like you said, you sat there and I think what I was getting at is you lost a lot of family time, like Andrew said, that you'll never get back. And I don't know if it was some milestones that your children had, you know, during that time where you were working 22 hours a day or on call or getting the 2 hours of sleep. But I'm sure there were that you'll never, you know, get back. And I say that because I was literally watching some home movies that I'd done, you know, thanks to Andrew. I was watching them on DVD today. And, you know, literally I was just sitting there. And unlike you, I'm not, you know, tied to my desk. I don't work, you know, a lot. I don't work, you know, as Andrew says, you know, you can't do it in 40. You ain't doing it right. So, you know, I get my 40 in and, you know, it'll be there tomorrow. You know, I got family to tend to. So, but even looking back on the home movies, I'm looking at, and one of my children look so much alike, my two daughters. And I'm literally sitting there. I'm like, man, it was just like yesterday where, you know, they were born and then I'm watching them take their first steps. You know, and I got all of this on tape, you know, and I was there, you know, doing the videotaping, so I was present. But even still, that time just goes by like that, you know. So, I mean, in your case, you weren't present. Or if you were, you weren't engaged. You had the laptop up. You had the two phones on your hip or whatever the case may be. And you can't get that time back. You just can't get it back. And I think that now is the opportunity when you get a new gig, you know, to say that, you know, that you're not going to pick up a job that's 60, 70 hours a week.
You know, he won't be able to sit down and tell his daughter, you got to play it three times right before you get up.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe you now because I have to say, I didn't miss anything. I didn't miss, like, concerts and everything like that. But I had that phone on me. When it wasn't her turn, I was sitting there tapping the keys, making sure that this high secret job I had was still up and running.
You know, I'd like to say something to you, brother. We see that, you know, I've seen that a lot in the military. You see guys who you know, and no disrespect to you, I'm not trying to slight you in any way, but it's like they have blinders on when they work. They focus. They focus on the mission. They understand their mission in the military. They embrace that mission. That mission becomes their blood. That mission is what they're all about. They do that mission, and then 20-plus years later, guess what? It's time to retire. And then when they retire, and I've seen it a lot, they die.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's common. I mean, it's like they don't know what to do. Like, wow, you mean now I have to, like, live my life without the military?
Wow.
I'm not trying. I don't know how to do that. You know, forget the 18 years I had, you know, or so years before I joined. You know, I wasn't even a man. I wasn't even barely a man. Now I'm an old man. You know, now I'm a middle-aged old man. I don't know what to do now. And they die. And, you know, I was in your same boat. I had a job. And unlike you, no matter how much I worked, I never did get the that 97% efficiency or that high efficiency. And the job that I had was designed that way. You always want to be running 30% efficient because of the mission and the nature of the beast. And it was a lot of travel, and it was really taxing. And my health was declining because I wasn't working out, wasn't eating healthy, living off the road, away from home. And I said, you know what? I got to get out of this job. You know, I'm going to do this job, but I got to get out of here. I can't keep this up. You know, the awards are great and all that stuff. And, man, you know, your leadership, all that's great, man. But I got to be closer to home. I got to spend some time at home. And so, you know, I started looking. And you know, and you know, I thank God I was able to find another job that allowed me to work on my home life and spend more time at home and get in shape and everything. So, you know, I hope you learn from this lesson to never put your job above yourself. And okay, always look at what you need yourself, and you need your family. That's number one. It's great to give them the money. It's great to provide for them. But, you know, whether you make it to all the recitals, everything, it makes a difference when you're there, man. And I know you're seeing that now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good words. And just, you know, just to piggyback on that is the fact that it is imperative, you know, that it's nothing like being present, you know, just being in their space. You know, you may, you know, in some cases you may have the laptop up, but like you said, I mean, it's nothing like being, you know, there at the recitals, you know, at, you know, doing everything, because you can't get that, I mean, you can't get that back. And it's just, I mean, it's, And the military example was a great example, because you think about those guys, and I'm not in the military, never have been, who probably would rather be home, you know, would rather have the gig like you had, where you could come home at night, you know, and not, you know, on the mission, or, you know, it's just, you know, how those guys would envy your situation. Where at least you do get the, you know, you're talking about you only get 2 hours of sleep and that kind of stuff, but at least you're home. You know, just imagine being in the field on a mission where you're getting 2 hours of sleep and it's irregular, and you know, you watching your back and all, you know, all this kind of stuff, and you don't have the pleasure of hugging and kissing your children, you know, at night, or you know, riding through and seeing the last inning of the baseball game or whatever the case may be. So.
Yeah, there was times, and just to cut you off right quick, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
our guest in the chat room says, I need to be on this call because I'm still at work now.
That's a problem.
That's a problem, but, you know, I mean, but, you know, I put these things, I don't know. As men, do we put things in categories? Do we put a job in category as a job responsibility as a man? This is my job. This is my field that I choose a long time ago. These are the risks that I'm taking by taking this job. Do we look at that when we first walk in the door for that interview?
I look at that now after what I've learned. Of course, I've messed up enough now to look at that. You know, I look at it. I do. And I categorize my job. My job is number two to my home life. I know exactly where my job is on the priority list.
Mm-hmm.
And men are, you know, you say categories. They say men are like waffles. You know, where you look at a waffle, you got, you know, the job, you got the wife, you got the kids, you got, might even, you know, got household stress in one of those boxes. But on the contrary, women are like spaghetti, where everything is connected, everything is intertwined, whereas, you know, a plate of spaghetti, everything is touching each other, whereas we're more segmented, like, you know, okay, this is the job. And I think that's where you ran into trouble, where you put all your eggs or all of your time into that one category,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the expense. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't bleed over into the family or the wife and the kids or whatever, because you were in that zone, you were in that particular category, which was your job. That's where you, you know, that's where you prioritize. That's where you. Maybe you didn't enjoy it, but at some reason you did, because you spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, because I'm gonna be honest with you, and I'm not. I'm gonna be a man and say it. I fell in love with my job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I fell in love with the prestige of my job, the fact
yeah.
that, you know, I was doing secret stuff, you know, the president and all the, you know, the stuff I could, you know, I had to sign press releases and all this stuff and not, you know, secrecy agreements you won't talk about, all that stuff, man. But at the end of the day, it was like, hell, I'm not home.
You're not home, man. And I would get home later. My wife be like, coming home. I mean, in the past, I was 40 hours or 45 hours. I would cook at night. So my wife would get off at 5:30. I would get off at 5:30, but she would get home early, get the kids' school work done. And when I come home, we just warm up the food. We sit down at the table all together as a family and eat dinner, old school style.
Yeah.
And then it came to, well, I got to get back on the computer because we still having problems with the servers, and I got to get these servers up. I got to make sure people are doing their job.
But then it probably got to a point where you were calling and saying, I can't make dinner tonight.
Then it got to the point where I couldn't make dinner. Then it was the point I was getting home at 10, 9:30.
Man, let me tell you something. When I took this new job, I'm in right now, I had one of my friends from my other job call me and said, man, what are you doing? The job you have now, it has no notoriety. It's not even a pay raise. It ain't money. You know, there's no prestige with it. And I said, yeah, man, but I'm home. And I asked him, I said, how does your wife feel about you never being at home? He said, I'm divorced.
Wow.
Well, one thing a lady told me at work, a manager, probably the same level, she told me, Patrice, don't take this too serious, but if you put too much in it, you're going to be just like me, and that's divorce.
Yeah.
Because her man, her husband, ex-husband, couldn't stand her doing all this work time.
Yep.
But we've come into that. Do women take it more? Do they accept because you're a hard worker, you do these things more easily than if it was the other way around?
I think it depends specifically on that couple because it can go either way. You know, and I think that, I mean, let's be real, fellas. There are some jobs where you cannot be home. Like if you're a pilot, like if you fly, you know, 747s, you just can't be home if you got that gig. You know, so, I mean, it is some jobs where, you know, versus we have jobs that maybe we don't need to be there, but, you know, like in the host case, he wants to be there or he feels that he needs to be there whether he does or not. It's something pulling him back, whereas, like, if you're a pilot, like you have to be in the pilot seat. You can't say, "Well, I'm gonna knock off early, Bob." You know, no. It's like we gotta fly to Florida or wherever you're going. So, but I mean, I think it depends. You know, back to your question, it depends on the couple. And I think that in any relationship, the ideal situation is that both the husband and wife would be home at 5 o'clock. But we know that's not ideal, and it's unrealistic for everybody's situation. But it's difficult to deal with, especially if you have children and you have you know, you want to get them in other activities because, I mean, you could literally have somebody serving as a single parent who's not even really a single parent because the other person is never there. They're always at work or they're on travel. So, I mean, literally, you got to marry, you know, they got kids, but you never see the other spouse until it is recital time or until it is, you know, the championship baseball game or whatever the case may be. And then after that's over, guess what? They go back to work. You know, they go back to wherever they were. They disappear again. So, I mean, I think it, you know, to your question, it can go, you know, either way, but in any case, your job can definitely sneak in there and become a mistress and become your priority and cause your divorce, your untimely divorce.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's 5 minutes to 10, and I want to narrow this little topic about me down, and let's get another talk about me all night.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about you all night.
Man, we ain't going to talk about me all night. But I have to say that my God works in mysterious ways. And what I mean by that is things are supposed to happen for a reason. And sometimes we don't even understand what that reason is or why it's happening at the time that you expect it to happen. But in closing, just to my story, my wife gets, in April, she gets 3 offers on 3 jobs.
Now, that's just crazy in this economy, 3 job offers. I just want to state that.
Well, it's really, but she took 2 of them because she was already on call at the hospital. She has always stayed on call. Then another hospital called her and said they need an on-call person. So she took that, but right after that, a full-time position came. But this full-time position came, and it was second shift.
What time did that start? 2 to 10.
2 to 10. So we were sitting here debating, saying, we were talking, and she was like, how am I going to take this job? Who's going to take care of the kids? You don't get home till 10, 11 o'clock. You know, and I said, no, don't you worry about it. I'm a manager. I could change my schedule around.
Right.
Then she said, why didn't you do that in the past then?
Wow. Gotcha.
And I told her I was honest. I said, there was a point I just didn't trust my team. So I did more. When I could have done less if I'd have just.
Yeah.
I did some things wrong. I did some things due to the fact that I had finally got it where it needed to be. Things were going smooth, and I was too untrustworthy
to
loosen up and let it go.
But what did you say at the beginning, Host? You said that you came in, it was 30% efficiency rate, and you revamped it, designed everything, and got up to 97%. But you designed it wrong. You designed it to include yourself. You know, you didn't design it around the team. And, you know, we have a philosophy around our job, and it's change the person or change the person. And what that means is, you know, that person, you change your attitude or you get rid of them. You know, so I mean, because you can have some wrong people in the wrong spots that's holding your team down. So change the person to change the person, whereas when you were designing the whole thing and got it up to 97%, they were only at 97% because you were probably doing like 80%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their performance might even went down. You know, it's like, oh, you know, boss man picking up my slack, I'm out. I bet you they weren't working 22 hours and getting sleep 2 hours.
I bet you
they weren't doing that.
There was a few because they had no choice. But, you know, it's just one of those things is that in that, where I was ending the story is that I finally changed my schedule around. And then on my birthday, I got released. They were going to bring in some new folks, go a different direction. I went to depressed mode, which is fine, but my wife took this other job and she had these other jobs. But the one thing I can say is that my job didn't put me on the bench, where if they put you on the bench, they give you a time limit on finding you a new job or they let you go.
So you on the bench until July 31st?
3 weeks, yeah. So it gave me time to be billable and still keep my pay and everything. But then I went to depression mode for a week because I didn't do anything. Then I started getting some work, so I did some work. But then you start relaxing and getting your life back. So now it's my responsibility to pick up the kids and do the homework. And the first week, man, I liked to went crazy because I didn't know what to do. It's like a whole new job.
Yeah, absolutely.
My wife really had 4 or 5 jobs, taking care of me, the kids, and going to work.
And now I know what you're talking about because I always used to wonder about you because you'd be on, it'd be like 10 o'clock, and you're like telling us that, yeah, I'm still doing homework. And I'm like, his kids is my kids' age. They need to be in the bed at 10 o'clock. But now he's trying to figure out the homework
situation. I'm trying to figure out the homework. She had this system down. My wife had this system down where she would do the homework Monday, Tuesday, have it all done for the week. And she would then, you know, when she gets it on Monday, she knew everything what was going on the week. So she had already prepared herself. So if they had any questions.
Right.
Me, I'm just following the little schedule book.
And
brothers, all right, you got this homework this night. All right, let's get to it.
Yeah, and brothers, I don't know if y'all are aware, but I got a second grader, and the homework ain't no joke.
I'm going to tell you right now, your second grader, hold on, I got a first grader, and there is no way under the sun I can help her with her homework. I do not understand it. I don't get it. And if it wasn't for my wife, I don't know what this child, I had to pay a tutor or something. I don't know.
I'm trying to tell you, brother. I almost went out and bought that tutor, man. I'm trying to tell you.
And you're
this
right, because I'm in the same boat, and my wife is actually a teacher. So, you know, she teaches eighth grade, but literally she knows the concepts and she knows the behind the scenes, like where they're trying to get them at. And what I used to do is literally, I'm like, no, what your teacher told you is, no, we're going to do it daddy's way, how daddy learned it. And I'd be getting notes home. The teacher be like, don't teach her your way. We're trying to teach them the new way. And then I talk to the wife, and it's like, and I'm like, I was telling the wife, I was like, I don't like this new system because it just don't look right to me and it don't work, you know. And
yeah.
Like the brother said, you know, I ain't slow, you know, whatever. So, I mean, it's like it shouldn't be when it comes to the homework that I'm literally dreading the homework package myself as an adult, you know, when it comes in the house because my daughter had questions and I'm just like, I can't help you because if we can't do it daddy's way, then I don't know what, you know, they got going on down there. But thankfully, like the brother said, thank God for my wife because she's more patient than I am when it comes to that. Because I'm just like, if you just learn it daddy's way, we can get this down, the concepts down quicker. Because my second grader, she's doing third grade math, but she struggles at math. You know, reading, that's her thing. You know, she's in gifted class and she can read. You know, I have to keep stuff away from her. You know, she reads so well. She's asking me, what is this? You know, what is that? So, but I mean, literally, if it wasn't for my wife taking the time, and like you said, Patrice, they got a system, you know, whereas now it got to a point where it wasn't enough time for us to eat dinner, do the homework, you know, have a little downtime before it was time for them to go to bed. So literally.
Man, I don't know how she does it.
Yeah, my wife changed her schedule.
I don't know how she got these kids in bed at the same time.
It's
like me. You got
to be on a routine.
You know, it's like me redoing a whole plan. I had to look at her plan, and I had to write it down. I had to put a flow chart together. And I'm serious. I had to do it in a business-like way so I could figure out how she got on this timetable.
My wife got an excellent system. I don't know how it works.
But it just needs us to say, now that I'm doing that, I've put my resume out there, and I've gotten offers on other things that wasn't even pertaining to work. It was on pertaining to things that I enjoy, like doing. And that's teaching kids the game of basketball. I do, like, little church league coaching and stuff like that. My dream was always to be a head coach. And now I got an offer to be a head coach in high school.
That's what's up.
And it was like, well, how am I doing it? Because in my mind, I'm like, I got to work. And somebody told me today, it's like, Chief, you don't know about all these jobs. You don't know why things happen for a reason. You can get a new job and make your own schedule, negotiate your own schedule.
Yeah.
And then when they said that, I checked my email, and it said 7 ways to negotiate. I see in an article. So God works in mysterious ways. But that's off me now. Let's get back on what somebody brought up about other people. A lot of things that, you know, our topic tonight, just to make sure that everybody understands what the topic is when you and your job get a divorce. And we talked about the military. Right now, you're in the middle of a war. A lot of soldiers are dying because they're taking too much medications to go back to war. Because they left a friend behind and may not be in the same, or that's all they know.
Or they get redeployed.
Right.
They retire.
They try to go out here in the real world and stay and be with family. But they so away from their family that they reenlist just to go back, or they end up committing suicide because they just can't handle it.
Yeah.
How does this affect the family?
And it's almost like, I mean, again, I've never been in the military. I didn't grow up, neither one of my parents or anybody's in the military, but I just can't imagine, you know, that a soldier's mentality, whereas that his fellow soldiers is like, I mean, his unit is like his family. I mean, so that's why they reenlist. That's why they like, nah, I got to go back, because, and at the expense of their, you know, wife and children, you know, that are here. And it's that, as we always talk about, it's all about that balance. It's like, you know, you got to make a decision, like, where your priorities lie.
I want to tell y'all guys, I mean, don't let your girls marry military members. You know, and you know, I say that basically to say this. When you meet a guy, when a young lady meets a guy that's already in the military, that comes with a huge commitment. And I'm going to just tell you right now, there's a 70% chance it's going to end in divorce.
Ooh.
Just out the jump. And my first supervisor in the military, first guy that ever supervised me, me and him, you know, we pretty much did our career together. I remember when we came home after being away for 90 days, got his wife pregnant with their second child. He retired from the military. He was a contractor, and then he was trying to get a government job. And, you know, I was able to pull some strings, and I was looking out for him, saying, man, you know, thank you for everything you did for me, you know, getting me to where I am. And, you know, we're going to get you a government job. Got him a government job, and a week before he started, he committed suicide.
Oh, man.
Because his wife was putting him through a divorce, and he was going through a messy custody battle over that second child. And it's like the military, it takes a lot. It takes a commitment that, I'm telling you, if your marriage can survive it is not, there's no easy way around it. There's just no easy way to deal with it. And those people that those guys meet, that you had those bonds with in the military, no, man, it ain't like family. That is your family. You know, it's guys I can call right now, you know, they're just like my brothers. I mean, so, yeah.
So your secondary family is your wife and your kids.
Well, I'm out of the military now. But as far as, you know, how I feel about them and how I feel about my family, you know, back home in Mississippi and you know, my family here, you know, it's just like my family. I mean, I'm not going to jeopardize my family here in Maryland for them, you know, and I wouldn't have to do that for me. But it's just like my brothers.
Yeah, and for you to say, and I know exactly where you're coming from, you know, because I have two daughters, but for you to say, don't let your daughters marry military men, it is, I hear exactly what you're saying. You know, it's so unfortunate because, you know, of course our military guys need love too, you know, and
they do. They do.
But I understand totally where you're coming from, because it is so, and military, and I think military is an added added pressure, because you don't know if they're going to come back. You know, when they do go off, and it's months at a time, you know, whereas we all, some of us on here have jobs where, you know, you're off. You know, I know, you know, I've got to go to Pittsburgh next week, and we got to be in North Carolina, but I'll be home. You know, I'm not going to be gone for 8 months.
Where you going, you know? Everybody speak English.
Right, exactly. That too. That too. But I mean, the reality is that I mean, we know how it is. Where it takes two. You know, we just gave the example of the homework. You know, like, you know, I can get one part, but the other part, you know, wifey got to get that part. And if she wasn't around, I would hire a tutor, because it's gonna take somebody else. But to put our, you know, our daughters through that, you know, it's difficult. And it's a catch 22. And I hear you, brother, exactly. And I was literally thinking the same thing. And even if, you know, maybe he's not in the military, but maybe he's a salesman who's gone 5 days a week and only home on Saturday and Sunday.
Foreign affairs.
Yeah.
Foreign sales.
It could be anything, You know, I mean, it could be anything. It could be, as I gave the example earlier, it could be a, you know, an airline pilot. You know, and when I go to the airport, you know, to fly around the country, I'm looking at these guys, man, and I'm just like, if I was in their shoes, and I'm, you know, leaving my family, just flying all across the world and or the country or whatever, and just always away from home, you know, even though they're making that good cake, it's like, at what price, you know, do you
pay? How do they balance it? How do they?
I just, my heart goes out to them when I thank them for their abilities and them going after their dreams and doing what, you know, I hope they love to do is fly planes. But flying people across the country, man, that's not a game. I mean, you're never home. You know, you just one day you in Canada, one day you in D.C., next day, I'm in Colorado or wherever.
Hotel rooms, yeah.
Yeah, and I know y'all know that. I know I hate eating out, you know, like on the road like that. And especially if I'm gone for like 2 or 3 days, like that first meal, I'm just like, gosh, I got to do this 5 more times. I'll be counting the times where I got to eat out again.
You know, by doing that, it affects the whole family. I mean, let's just talk about it. You're not eating at the table. You don't have any unity. You're not building a rapport with your family, if somebody is away from the home. But here's the monkey wrench of the night. When you divorce your kids, how does that affect the family?
What do you mean divorce your kids?
Let me put it to you this way. You have kids, and one, your job is in front of your kids, so you're kind of divorcing them that way by leaving them out, and they're always concerned. But when a man leaves the home, because one of the definitions that we said, and I'll read it again, about job is any person is expected or obliged to do duty or responsibility. A man's responsibility is to his wife and kids.
Yeah.
And a lot of men, I mean, look at the world today. A lot of men are not in the home with the wife and kids or the girlfriend or whatever you want to call it. They have abandoned the home. So when you divorce your kids by abandoning the home because you put you, just like a job, you put you before them, how does that affect your kids?
But it's like you just said earlier.
You divorce your kids.
In the first hour, it's a cycle because you said that you do what you do because of your parents. I mean, they were hustling all the time, working 2 and 3 jobs, so that's what you do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think you can almost answer your own question by how did it affect you, you know, when you were growing up and your parents were, you know, I don't know if they were able to work 2 and 3 jobs and still, you know, put in the time that where you didn't even really notice, you know, whereas in your case, kind of taken it to an extreme where you leave at 7 and come home at 10. You know, I don't know if your parents could have pulled off 2 gigs and got home at 6. I don't know.
Well,
so, I mean, you know, I spin it around and say, how did it affect you growing up, seeing your parents working all the time?
Well, for my mom, she did the morning shift. She did the 4 a.m., did 3-4 hours drawing blood, and then she went on to her chemist job at the hospital, which was both at the same spot, one across the street from the other. The VA hospital is across the street from Duke Medical Center.
Yeah.
So
what time did she get home?
And she would always get home at 4:30, 4:45. Because, you know, we never had a babysitter. Me and my sister grew up. We grew up at a time where you got off the bus, you got in the house, the first thing you did was drop your books at the table and pick up the phone, or she was calling because she knew exactly what time the bus was getting in, and we'd say we were at home.
So she would be home a little bit after that? She would be
home
a little bit after that?
She'd be home right a little bit after that.
So to answer your question, like she did, I mean, while y'all were asleep, so it really wasn't no time that she was missing y'all, because if she was in the house, she probably would have been asleep.
Yeah. So
what kind of life, what kind of what kind of things did you have growing up? What kind of materialistic things? I mean, did you want for anything?
No. It was all there. Whatever I needed. Whatever basketball trip I wanted to go on, whatever camp, whatever car, whatever clothes, whatever shoes I needed.
Yeah, so but your parents were working a lot, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that a lot of times because I was the same way, and I think that a lot of times we get a picture of the way life is supposed to be materialistically.
Mm.
And when people say, I've arrived, you know what I mean? So you've got your $1 million house, you've got your Mercedes, you got your X, you know, these things. Kids got ATVs, whatever they need, you know. You look good in the community. You're doing well. But I think that the cost of that is, like you say, divorcing your children, divorcing your family. Because at the end of the day, that's just stuff. You can't take it with you. But those years that you've missed because you was always on the grind, you know what I mean, you can't get that back.
No, you can't get that back.
You know, and we always talk about, you know, do you need a job that pays $125,000 a year, you know, $200,000 a year that's going to keep you away from the family? Or can you live off 60 and be home by 5 every night to do homework?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And sometimes we make the other choice because we think, yeah, but, you know, that's 60, yeah, I'll be all right. But, you know, there's things that I need. So I need to take this job that's going to, you know, put me in a different elite income tax bracket, you know.
Good words.
Exactly what you said.
Yeah, you know. And to me, honestly, I think it's selfish because I've been there, you know, and it was selfish because I wasn't home. And my excuse was, I got to make this money.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do no ballet. I gotta go to work. I can't do X, Y, Z. I got to go, you know, I got to make this money. I can't help you with, you know, have your mom do your homework. I'm mm-hmm. going to be working, you know.
So T-Hawk, is it safe to say in some way, shape, or form that your job partially caused your divorce, your first divorce?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And I listened in on earlier on the call, and I was listening to people say how they fell in love with their job.
Mm.
Well, falling in love with your job is like falling in love with a prostitute.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a prostitute. A prostitute will never love you, period.
But I have to say, to add to that, to add on to what you're saying, now it didn't happen to me. I don't know why, but I kind of got it. I knew how to handle it because it happened to my father, and it's probably happened to a lot of y'all.
Mm.
Once you start loving your job, those women become your wife at work.
Your work wife. Work
I
wife.
I mean, we talked about this on a couple calls before.
I mean, look, you right, but that's not even the significant part. That's insignificant, the women and the coworkers. We're just talking about the job itself.
Mm-hmm.
Loving that job over your family is detrimental because now it's to the point where I can't quit. They need me. You know what I mean? The needs of your employer are more important than the needs of your family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me throw this out there. Should you ever love your job or should you just get to the level where you just, I mean, it's okay to like it or really, really, really like it, but should you ever get to the level where you just love your job?
I love my job for the fact that it allows me to spend more time with my family.
Gotcha.
Good there.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's
and I will never love a job that will not allow me to spend what I think is enough time with my family. And before I take any other job, every boss, the boss in that job, I'm going to ask him, do you have a family? How do you feel about daycare? How do you feel about homework? How do you feel about kids getting sick?
Yeah,
ballet, all that stuff. And if you don't understand what I'm talking about, I'm not taking that job.
That's right.
Taking off all the money in the world. I mean,
that's
I would
right.
rather have peace of mind. For me, that's more important to me. Peace of mind and taking care of my family is more important to me than me trying to make $200,000 a year, $300,000 or whatever. I mean, it's
whatever
important to me.
Would y'all say that in 2011 that employers and supervisors are more conducive to what the brother was saying about, yeah, I respect your daycare, you know, we're really flexible, you got to take care of the kids or whatever the case may be, or do y'all think in 2011 that the job climate is, we want to have access to you 24/7, 365. If you're not the one, we'll get somebody else. You know, how do y'all see it, you know, in today's environment? Is it the, you know, we're flexible, you know,
I see it like this, man, and let me just say this. You can say all that stuff when you meet a boss and they can tell you the right thing, but I don't know a job in the world that's going to tell you you're working too hard. If you put your all into it and you just, like, forget your family and you work there 80 hours a week or whatever, they'll let you do it.
Yeah.
They ain't going to stop.
Yeah, they ain't going to stop. And they sure didn't stop me.
Yeah, they'll let you go.
Making me look good.
Yeah, and then they say, okay, now here's the door. You're like, well, wait a minute. I gave everything to y'all. I even took away from my family. They're like, thank you. But
thank you.
And so in 2011, yeah, they'll say whatever they want to say to get that person in that position. But you have to enact that verbal contract by following through your end, making sure you do take that time for your family.
And I think that the contract is important because you have to stick to, you know, what you were hired to do. You know, and if you were hired to work 8 to 5 and you doing that or whatever, then anything over that is extra and it was not in the original contract, you know, and I know that some things come up and, you know, we've been the rules, but it can't really, you know, they'll let you work till 10. I mean, they're not going to say, oh, hey, you're supposed to go home at 5, you know, per the contract. They're going to be like, all right. And I know in, I don't know if it's Korean culture, I may be mistaken, but in their culture, I saw recently that there, as an employee, you're supposed to be there before the boss, and you're supposed to stay after the boss. So basically, when the boss walk in, you're supposed to already be there working, and when the boss leaves, you're supposed to still be there working. You know, that's just their culture. It's like you don't leave before the boss, or you don't get there after the boss.
Yeah, I can believe it. I can believe it. I had folks that on my job that they quit because they just got burnt out.
Yeah.
They didn't have no other life.
Yep.
But this is good, fellas. This is good. Everybody all right?
Yes, sir. It's good stuff.
Well, I mean, I want to get back on these kids because I think we need to make sure that now everybody knows this call is recorded. Whoever picks this call up later understands how important kids are and how they get traumatized by you, the things that we do. My son and the ones that know me and see me, on Sunday, my son wears a suit. Everywhere if I have a suit on, he wants a suit on because he thinks if this is what my dad do, this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, if this is how hard work is, this is what I have to do to get things done, or he's going to be disappointed. Am I putting too much pressure on my kids by what I'm doing?
You could be. Is
there a proper question? Did I say it right?
As I said before, that, I mean, you could look at yourself and what you're doing to your kids as a result of what your parents
mm-hmm.
did to you. So when your son gets out there, is he going to know, you know, how to balance, you know, the quality of life? Is he going to be working 22 hours a day, you know, with the suit on, you know, making sure that the efficiency ratio is 97%? You know, and that's a conversation that you need to have, but, you know, I know with my kids, and again, I travel, but it's not for any too long. You know, I might be gone 3 or 5 days here and there or whatever, but I know my youngest, and she don't pay no attention to me. you know, when I'm home. She's a mommy's girl. You know, where's my mommy? Every time it's like, where's my mommy? So literally before, like, I would travel and I wouldn't pay no attention to her. You know, it would just be the same attention, you know, as before. But what was happening is that every time, guaranteed, she would act up at school when I travel. And I couldn't understand it. You know, I was like, why do you even care that I'm gone? Because when I'm here, you don't pay me any attention. You know, you're like, where's my mommy? You know, I want my mommy.
I see you got the same problem. You in my driveway.
But listen, what happened was I figured out that she actually does like that. You know, because I had to start spending time. Like, when I know that I'm going to be gone 2 or 3 days, I just pull her aside and I'll spend time just with her, you know, and I might have her sister with me, I might not, but I make sure that I get some quality time in with her, and you know what happened? The bad report ceased, you know, because before I'd just be like, all right, you know, I'll be back in a couple of days, you know, I'd holler at y'all, but what happened was that wasn't enough for her, and I thought it was, you know, and then I started spending that time, I'm like, all right, you want to have a tea party? You know, we'll have a tea party after dinner, just me and you, and we'll do it. And then the next day I fly somewhere, and then 2 or 3 days later I come back. But, and I'm talking to her, you know, when I'm gone, I'm like, how was school? Were you a good listener? Yes, I was a good listener. And before, that didn't happen. You know, I had to make a point to spend that time with her before I left, even though normally she didn't want nothing to do with me, but I made a point. I'm like, yo, come hang with me for a few minutes. And then I'd be like, I talk to her because she's 4 years old. I'm like, I got to go for a couple of days. So I just want you to know so you won't be upset, but we're going to spend this time that we got before I go.
You know, I didn't even know my youngest knew I was gone or even know, you know. And you know, my wife was telling me, like, yeah, she's noticing. You know, she doesn't even like going to sleep when you're not here. She doesn't feel safe in the house.
Wow.
And one day I was just cleaning out the closet, and I had the suitcase on the bed, and she came in the room, and she just looked at me, and her eyes filling up like, where are you going now? And I'm like, excuse me? She's like, where are you getting ready to go? And I'm like, go where? I'm not going anywhere. She said, well, you got your bags, so you're leaving again, right? And I was like, dang. It hit me. It was like, man, so every time she sees, you know, luggage, it's like, she's already conditioned herself, like, well, I'm leaving.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's what I mean by divorce. I mean, when men's job is at home, too. It's not just the work job.
Mm-hmm.
They have to take care of home, too. That's part of our job as head of household. And I don't think we realize, in the heat of the moment when husband and wives are having a disagreement and they make some decision, how it affects the kids. Because kids are watching. They may not say anything or understand, but they're not stupid. And they see stuff when dad has his bag and he has to go out. So you leaving again? How long are you going to be gone this time? When we have those arguments, how does that affect the kids when we argue in front of our kids?
You have to be, I mean, careful with that. I say, of course they know when you're arguing, but, you know, the hooping and hollering and raising your voice, I mean, you have to be careful with that because when they get older, they'll look at that as acceptable, you know, whereas it's really not. I mean, you can have a disagreement, but you need to be hooping and hollering, raising your voice, and getting up in each other's face and that kind of stuff. I mean, that's a bit unnecessary. You know, granted, you can get heated, but you got to control your anger. So you just have to be careful when you have disagreements with the wife and how you approach it because they're watching. You know, just like the brother said, you know, he just cleaning out the closet, put the suitcase down. They're like, oh, where are you going? It's like, I ain't going anywhere. I'm just cleaning out my closet. So they're definitely watching, and they know what's going on. Because my daughter, my oldest, my 8-year-old, she told me what we were doing for the weekend because me and the wife We're talking about, you know, the plans for the weekend. One weekend here we had to travel or whatever and see the family or whatever, extended family. And she told me, she was like, "Daddy, you know, we know what's going on, even though you think we're not listening or we don't pay attention, but we know what's going on." And thankfully, you know, we were talking. It wasn't like anything secretive or anything, or we weren't arguing about it. We were just having a conversation, but I didn't think they were paying attention. You know, but she was like, "Yeah, we know, because we're going here on Friday, and then we're going to leave." And it's like, yeah, y'all do pay attention. Y'all paying too close attention. I ain't mean to tell you everything. You know?
I believe it, man. I believe it 100%.
100%. Yeah, I don't think you should argue in front of them, no. I, you know, you try not to, and it does something to them. I think it does.
Yes, it does.
Because I'm sure we can all remember our parents arguing in front of us and how that affected us as,
hey,
you know,
we traumatized the grown folks.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
Our parents, like, "Mom, why are you still working two jobs? You got over 30 years. Well, you know, you got to make sure, blah, 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 blah." And I'm like, "You will kill yourself."
Yeah.
I mean, is that like my dad's retired, but he still works two jobs. they like to go, but they always going on trips. So
right, he got to get that trip money.
He got to get that trip money.
Yeah,
or it's gonna be high up on the hog on that credit card.
Right, or dipping into his retirement.
Right. So and then he's an old veteran too, so he gets his check from that too. So.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, I remember one time, man, I didn't know what that check was. I was just like, oh, this is like advertisement. I threw it in the trash.
The veteran's check?
Boy, the joy of children.
Well, he got home. He said, "What my?" Because he know when it come through the mail. I said, "What, that yellow envelope? Oh, I said, it's trash." What?
Oh, man. He should have had direct deposit.
I know.
Some of them will get that tomorrow. You know, some of them will get that tomorrow. That's for tomorrow. You'd be like, "Oh, that's what Rodney was talking about."
Man. When you or your job gets a divorce, we already talked about putting the job on the pedestal. We talked about, has it taken over your life? But, I mean, let's just think about it. Isn't it partially society's fault engraving what men's values are supposed to be?
If you let it. You're absolutely right if you let it, because as T-Hawk was saying earlier, valuing things, you know, over relationships.
I mean, I think we're taught that. I swear I think we're taught that throughout school.
Yeah.
Even your kids now are getting, they're doing, you know,
they're subtly being
projects
groomed
on historical factors or people, biographies. And they're saying, "I want to be like this because this is what this person did. This is how they got there. And the effort you need to..." But nobody talks about these efforts and how much it takes to do that.
Yeah, or the experience.
Or the background that. Did they lose their family because they did this?
Exactly. Worldly success and family failure.
Yeah, but you still see it. You still see it. You look at the politicians, you look at the professional athletes, you look at all these people and just see how many of them are losing their families because stuff they do pertaining to work, how it affects their household.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's a setup for failure. When you think it's success, you are successful one way, but you fail in another way. And the way that you fail is more greater than that success. Because then you lose your family. Or your family's hanging on because you're this great provider.
Right.
But, you know, it's all like a smoke and mirror. Yeah, we, you know, we'll hang on. You know, he paying the bills.
Yeah. I mean, and just to add on to that factor, there was a case, I don't know if everybody on the phone is from Maryland, where now you have all these folks who've worked hard, got their law degrees, masters, et cetera, taking these fabulous jobs, taking bribes, because of the love of green. Is the love of green our Achilles heel?
Yeah, it's most people get it twisted, but money is not the root of all evil. Love of money is the root of all evil. And the old adage goes, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when there's money and power and respect involved, it's just, you have to be firmly rooted and grounded. You have to be, because that stuff will, it's not a matter of if it will succumb you, it's a matter of when. And you look at, you know, as Tony said, the politicians, the athletes, they're not firmly rooted. They're not firmly grounded, because all of this stuff is going to come at you. You're going to have the ladies come at you. You're going to have the dollars thrown at you. You're going to have the power. And, you know, as the brother said earlier, the prestige, the notoriety, you know, all of these things are going to come. And it's like, at what cost? At what expense? Is this worth, is this prestige, is this, you know, is this worth me losing my family? Because what we don't realize as men, you're just not losing your family. You could potentially lose a generation. You know, because you do something stupid, your daughter sees that, your son sees that, and that wrecks your life. You know, then you out of the house and you're not in the home, you're a weekend dad or whatever, you know, the case may be. That can affect them in an adverse, you know, way. And then when they get in their situation, they're like, well, you know, that daddy wasn't there and I'm halfway all right. But I think that's what we fail to realize, that it doesn't just stop, you know, at our children. It's our children's children and their children's children, you know. So it's a whole generation that we could lose if we don't stay on top of our game and be true head of household and just be firmly rooted and grounded in God. I mean, that's the bottom line.
I agree with you, because, I mean, it says in the Bible, I want to say it's Matthew chapter 6, where it says you cannot serve two gods. You can't serve the God of money and God. You just can't do it. But
you know, it's even deeper than that, when it says you got one and the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard task for a lot of people.
If you're born that way, because a lot of us was not born in church. A lot of us, even we were born in a church. It was, I want you to be better than me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want you to have the things that I could not have. So yeah. I'm going to teach you, or I'm going to stay on you on your books in school, so that you can have a work ethic better than I have, that you can have the things that you want for your.
You know, just to say something there, neighbor, just real quick. You know, I think you know, society does put emphasis on the haves and the materialistic thing, and you know, I definitely think that as a society, we are taught to love money more than our children.
Mm.
And when I say our children, I'm not talking about the children within the walls of this house I'm laying in. I'm talking about all children.
Mm-hmm. Word. And I agree with you. I agree 100% with you. But I got to ask you, when you and your job get a divorce, is it due to the fact of the internet?
The internet?
The internet. We just had a congressman.
Wow. He ain't get a divorce, though.
He
about to be divorced.
Yeah,
Pelosi on him.
But I mean, but now he's in a position where he may end up getting divorced because he has affected his family because of the internet. These Facebooks, these technology, in the past, my dad wouldn't be out there taking pictures of himself and
before I say this, now please understand, bro. I'm trying to like your dad, but you know, back in the day, our dads, they didn't have Facebook, and I mean,
right.
That dude right there, sure he got caught up in something crazy, but he was doing it for the thrill, just sending random women pictures of himself. I mean,
Congress where a month ago. Another congressman just got busted for the same thing.
Right. Hey, man, they congressmen are people, too. They got
criminal
problems, infidelity, you name it.
It ain't have nothing to do with the job. Nothing.
But he's a person we put our faith in.
It should have had something to do with the job.
Put their faith in to run this country.
Man. Because of the job he's got, he should have used better judgment.
Yeah.
Because of the position that he holds.
Right.
Yeah, it's poor judgment.
Poor judgment. I mean, you're a freak. That's fine. People are freaks. It is what it is. People on this phone is a freak. But at a certain point, you got to say, you know what? I can't do this because I'm going to really look like a freak if I get caught.
You shouldn't let your freakiness affect your money and your family.
Thank
That's
you.
That's right.
So
you know,
as long as you point your freakiness in the right direction, see, he was pointing his in various directly
all over the place.
See, that's his job. Freakiness is a job. I hope y'all know that.
Oh, yes. Now, I do agree with that.
It goes under the job category.
It goes back to what I said is that he wasn't firmly rooted. I mean, him and his wife are unequally yoked. I don't know if y'all know that he's Jewish and she's Muslim.
No,
you know, so I don't even know how.
I didn't even read that.
How does that even work out? literally, his whole thing was, and again, it goes back to that power. And just like you said, the dude got caught up sending the picture just a few months ago and had to resign. But it's all about once you get to a certain level, they think that they're untouchable. And whether it be a politician, an athlete, that's why he didn't resign. He was like, hey, I made a mistake. You know, I lied to y'all, but I'm going to keep my job. You know, I ain't resigning because y'all need me. You know, I mean, it's arrogant.
Yeah.
Man, I just don't understand it these days. I mean.
But, and see, it goes back to your question earlier about society. Now, some parts of society are calling for his resignation, where other parts are not. So if society as a whole was like, oh, nah, man, this guy got to go, period, he'd be gone. But there's some segments that say, hey, no, he's apologized. He needs just this a personal matter. When really it's affecting, you know, the whole moral fabric of society when you let these people, you know, in any position that they just like, well, you know, he's okay. You know, it's all right if he's sending, you know, chest shots or crotch shots, you know, to girls, and he's married. Hey, ain't okay. It's okay. He's apologized. He still can lead us, you know, in the direction we need to go. No, he can't, because he has lost all his integrity. And then when it first came out, he didn't fess up. He didn't, you know, oh, I was hacked. That's a prank.
Yeah.
He got me. I mean, then when the guy is like, oh, well, you know, and thankfully he did fess up to everything and didn't, you know, cut no corners. But at the end of the day, it's like, you were embarrassed, but you weren't embarrassed enough to resign.
I heard he was backed into a wall when somebody says, well, you better come clean because I got some pictures, and I'm getting ready to
leak them out. This is the internet. We got all of them.
Yeah.
We got all of them. You better come clean.
Yeah, we got all the pictures from every sixth girl. We done hacked their computer. You done. That's
same
all
thing,
I understand.
Look, same thing with Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods still, to this day, used some big words. You know what I mean? Some big crazy words with his confession. But the video with his voice on it, that came out, he could no longer run.
Right.
You can't run because you get so dumb in the way they do it.
And again, it's how can you be so dumb, which is what I always say, But it's the fact that these folks think that they're untouchable.
Yeah.
I mean, they think that they're not going to get caught, and if they do get caught, you're going to forgive them, and you're going to just brush it under the rug, and society's going to be like, well, it's okay. You know, we forgive them. It's all right. We all have personal failings and you know, and indiscretions. It's okay. It's all right. You're good. But the reality is it goes back to, you know, all about control. Because he was obviously he wasn't in control. It was an addiction, you know. And he said he didn't. I believe the man when he said he didn't meet with any of the ladies or didn't, you know, talk. I mean, he just talked to them, which is still just the emotional stuff is sometimes can be worse than the actual physical. But you know, at least you know he didn't do that. But it's all about that. It was the thrill of it. You know, like, ooh, you know, let me see what this girl, you know, let me see the reaction I can get from this girl or this girl.
We're talking about politicians. I got to ask. I gotta talk about my man, my favorite man.
Who?
Our president. Our president had to make a decision in 2007, 2008, whenever it was, where he had to sit down. He had to say, Michelle, I got to put you on the back burner because I'm getting so much pressure, and I think I'm going to do it. Do you agree, and are you going to be with me if I put my name in nomination for the President of the United States?
Well, I don't know.
I'm just saying it to say, if you want to do something, if you had a dream, if you wanted to change, or you wanted to do something that is going to take a period of time away from the family, and you are man enough to come to your wife and say, we need to sit down and talk about it, is that acceptable?
Doing it right now. Just did it.
That's not the job to talk about, though, because, you know, she's in the game, too.
No, but it is a job, because I don't think that it's any job that should and this listen to what I'm saying is that being the president of the United States, we are his secondary priority. His family is always first. Period. So I don't think it's any job that you can take. Even the leader of the free world, your family is the first priority. So I don't think the conversation went like that. You know, it's like, hey, we gotta do some things or whatever. But the fact of the matter is you should never put your family on the back burner for some job. I don't care what job it is.
You're right, but what I'm saying is I don't think that the job...
You're breaking up.
Hello?
Yeah.
Tone.
You're breaking up. Go
you're
ahead
breaking
now.
Up, man.
Go ahead. You're good now.
Don't move.
I'm breaking up?
No, you're good now.
Okay, I don't think the job, because the presidency, his family is involved. His wife is involved. It's not like he's leaving for long periods of time and she's not, you know, most of the time you see him where he's at, you see her with him. You see what I'm saying? So it's not like he took a military role and he's gone for 6 or 8 months.
But it's a job where you're bringing your family into a different environment.
That's
you bring your family into the public. That means you're going to have Secret Service folks, everywhere you go, you're going to have somebody else, maybe other than me, with a gun, walking with you every step you take.
But that's
you're going to you're gonna have to be in front of the camera. You're going to have
right.
to change your image. You're going to have to do these things.
We're talking about alienate. We're talking about divorcing the family, divorcing the kids, being away. If the family is involved in that type of lifestyle, because they are, but
okay.
they're still a family. They're still a unit.
So, okay, I had to put it out there because he has, to me, the most toughest job of anybody in this world. And is there a time where, I mean,
I think
let's go back a couple of weeks when, or all right, he's getting ready to jump on Mr. Bin Laden. How does that conversation go?
Well, I don't think he has a conversation with his wife about that kind of stuff, but I think it goes back to what Tony was saying about it's a family decision. Like, you just don't run for president without your wife and kids on board. Because as you look, you know, in the other case, Mitch Daniels was going to be running for president, but his wife and his children were like, nope, no, you're not. And some people look at that as like, oh, you know, he's, you know,
but
he would
have
been.
What if he said no and he didn't?
Yes, sir. Hold on, Mr. Hogan. Go ahead.
Can I put a little something into this?
Go ahead.
Just the difference between president and any other job out there. President is universal, pretty much the commitment and the limelight and the Secret Service and the danger. It's pretty much known what comes with that job, a lot of stress and a lot of that stuff, a lot of prolification. This new venture that I'm taking on right now, I sat down with my wife and I explained to her exactly what it is and what I assume it's going to be. And before I said I would do this new venture, I asked her and I talked to her about it, and she said, okay. And I think that's the way, you know, you should approach every decision, you know, when it comes to picking jobs or doing a community service at the church or whatever. You know, get that understanding and that communication out there, and I think that's how you should approach it. You know, I mean, that's the difference between the presidency and any other thing out there.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. But I think that same conversation can be had with the presidency. I mean, it's like,
oh, yeah,
I'm about to run. And I mean, because the wife has to be on board. You can't.
Yeah, if she ain't on board, you ain't going to win.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Or you're going to be divorced.
I'm going to ask Tone, because
mm-hmm.
This is very important. Tone, you there?
I'm right with you.
3 years ago, you got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
That you wanted to find a way to save marriages.
Mm-hmm.
How did that conversation go when you said, this is what I'm going to do. It's going to take away my Tuesdays.
Wow.
I think this is important. I think this is important because basically what you did is, I mean, to be honest with you, because like you said, we all have to have this conversation when we want to do something new.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything that we do new takes away a piece of the pie from what you're doing with your family.
And you're right. And it was a conversation.
Mm.
Obviously, the conversation went well.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But it was a conversation. It wasn't, I just, okay, Tuesday I'm going to be busy. Leave me alone. No, that's
right.
What I'm going to do. This is the idea of how do you feel about it. Think it's a great idea. Okay, this is where I'm going to be. Let's try it out and see what happens.
2.5 years later.
Still on the phone Tuesday night.
That's what's
up. Yeah, because the funny thing is, and we've told people this, is that a lot of times I think at first, though our wives think it's a great idea and they want to support us, they don't tell the truth.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, cool, for a while. And maybe in their head, it's like, it's a good idea, but I don't think it's going to last.
Yeah.
And then once they see people coming, and you're like, you need to help me out. You need to get on. No, I'm still not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because it took almost a year for my wife to start listening into the calls.
Mm-hmm.
She would go downstairs, I would be upstairs, or I'll be upstairs. I mean, downstairs, and she would be upstairs. And then there was times once she started understanding the concept and listen, replaying the calls and listening to what men had to say, it was a different story, but it took time.
But even rewind it and flip it, what if T.R. had that conversation and the wife, for whatever reason, put the kibosh on her? She was like, nope. I want you to be with me on Tuesday night or whatever night or whatever the case may be. What if she was like, nah, I don't think so. I'm not down for it. We wouldn't be here today. We would be talking right now. I mean, literally,
I don't know if that's the case.
Because you would have did it because I said so much.
I would have done it anyway.
Wow.
And here we go. And this is
wow.
Where I'm getting at. Here we go. Now the truth is coming out, and this is what we need to say. When we take that step and say, baby, I told you what I want to do. I know you're not with me, but I'm going forward with it anyway.
Yeah, this was something that was bigger than her.
Oof. But
that was one hell of a sale right there.
Yeah.
This was big,
but
this was bigger than her, and the reason why I say it was bigger than her was because from where it came from.
Right. Oh, okay. Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
The big
and it was something that I struggled with, and I kept hearing it and hearing it, and I was like, nah, I ain't doing that. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do no conference call. I don't know how to do none of that.
Okay.
I don't know who's going to get on the phone. I don't know none of that. I don't know who I'm going to talk to, nothing. I don't know nothing about none of this. I've never scheduled anything. You know what I mean? I don't know how to build a website. Nothing do I know. I've been in the car business and then in the mortgage business. That's what I do. Talk to me, yeah, I'll go do all that. But something else, you know, I've never done church ministry, nothing. You know what I mean? And I was like, nah, nah, nah. But it kept coming. Do it this way. Do it this way. You got to do it. And it's funny that you mentioned President Obama, because that was the deciding factor when he got elected. I said, here's a family man. You know what I mean? And for, I don't know what it was. It was just something said, now it's time. And that same month in January, I grabbed a topic. I called every male friend that I had in my phone book. I said, I want you guys to get on this call tonight, and we're just going to marry men. We're just going to talk, and I'm going to see how it works. I think we had 10 or 12 guys on the first call, and it worked well. So then I said, all right, next week I'm going to try it again with a different topic, and it worked well. And then I went to, okay, we need a website. I didn't know how to put a website, but I went on, you know, Googled it, and then we had a website, and now we have a website. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, it was bigger than her.
But,
you know, if one of my coworkers said, hey, it's a good idea, it wouldn't have been bigger than her. And I'd be like, nah, dude, I can't do it. My wife said no.
Yeah, but I'll rewind that and flip it around again, because we're here now because your wife gave you confirmation. That it was a good
exactly.
Thing.
Exactly.
It was, you know, it's that was, you know, you took it to her thinking that it really didn't matter what she said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it did, you know, would have hurt you, but in reality, like you said, you would have been like, I'm going forward. It came from the man upstairs, period, the end.
Period.
But that was your confirmation. And she was like, yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, I want to go ahead.
I just want to add one last thing.
Yeah.
And to this day, she has never listened to one of our calls that I know of.
That you know of.
That you know of.
I'm going to say that I know of because it's never come back and say, hey, I was listening to the recording last night. And we've never had that conversation.
But, hey, Tom.
Yeah.
She listened to your calls.
Okay.
Because her and Sharon be here texting.
Oh,
about the call.
That you know of. There you go. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, it hasn't been made knowledge to me. And believe me, she goes to bed at 10:30. So on Tuesday nights and most nights during the week. So trust me, when I come upstairs, she's never listening. There's no computer playing there for years.
On Tuesday nights.
On Tuesday night. So if they're texting on Tuesday nights, then it's probably Sharon giving her information.
Five or so.
Yeah.
You know, just to give us perspective there, you know, you said you were going to do it regardless because, you know, you had a higher calling.
Yeah.
You know, there was a situation with me and my wife. There was a time to get together with me and some of my friends, and I told my wife, you know, I'm not asking you for permission. I'm telling you that I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay. And she supported it 100%. And, you know, when I asked her, I said, so why did you support this 100%? And she said, well, because it meant a lot to you. And, you know, I love you. And if it means a lot to you, then I'm for it.
Okay.
And that was like, wow, okay. All right. So, you know, there's another perspective there. You know, just like you said earlier, the gentleman on the phone, he said his wife stayed up with him. When he was working late at night, you know, she was just, you know, getting their little personal time in. You know, that's just her way of supporting. And, you know, hey, this means a lot to you, but I'll take you, you know, the way I can take spending time with you, you know. And we need to acknowledge him for that also, you know. we can put our foot down and say, hey, we're doing this and that's it. And, you know, they'll say, okay, cool. You know, some things you're going to have to fight your life.
Right.
But it's 11 o'clock, but lifelong dreams, that worked. Have you felt different because you haven't achieved your lifelong dream? And then you want to pursue your lifelong dream before you die, and you say, baby, we're going to make some changes because this is, I got to do it. And this is how it's going to affect the family.
It all depends on how long those lifelong dreams were. I mean, if you was a kid and you always wanted to be an astronaut when you grow up, and
right.
Now you're not an astronaut, guess what? You ain't going to be an astronaut.
Thank you.
You can forget about it. Get some new dreams.
Yep.
But let's say you always wanted to be an entrepreneur. You wanted to start your own business. Well, that's a minor change. That's a major change. Right? Because you gotta get collateral.
Yep.
You got to get insurance.
Yep.
You got to go out there and network and build a company from scratch.
I think the key to that too also is you got to have a reserve. The tank's got to be on swollen for about 2 or 3 years, where all your bills and your family and stuff is taken care of. Until you have that, then it's just a dream, because right now the family's going to be suffering until your business gets up and running.
But
I think you got a prerequisite to that, and that would be it.
I think even also very important is the fact that, you know, before she becomes your wife or, you know, whatever, that she knows that's your dream.
Yeah.
So that one day when you do walk in the house, like me, I ain't never told my wife about me being an entrepreneur. So if I walk in tomorrow and say, hey, you know what, I quit my job, I'm an entrepreneur, you know, well, come on now, really? You know,
yeah.
You know, I think so also, you know, just like, you know, your daughter marrying a military member up front, you know, she need to know what all that comes with. So, hey, if she knows that's your dream and she still marries you, then one day you decide to make that happen, that spark finally fires off, guess what? As a wife, she's got to support that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Being supportive. Well, it's 11 o'clock, fellas. And one thing I can say is, I wrote down a lot of notes and took a lot of this stuff that y'all said in. This was great for me. I hope it was great for some other folks. I know maybe some folks have been through this and have found the symptom. Where it doesn't happen to them again. I think we heard that tonight, that, you know, hey, after a while, after 40 hours, I'm done.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I used to wonder when I would talk to older guys and I'd say, why you don't want to be a manager no more? Why you don't want to be a 14, 15? That's great money.
Like, yeah, at a price.
Yeah.
More money, more problem.
Yep.
Yeah, but their main purpose was too much responsibility. I want my freedom.
Yep.
And I never understood that, being a young guy who was just trying to make it and had that drive and that this is what I want to do, this is where I want to be before I, you know, you have these goals that you set. And you know
the funny part about that.
Then you see these older people sitting around like, man, I'm good where I am. I'm just waiting on retirement. I got about two, three, four more years, and I'm good.
The young guy hadn't seen that grind.
Yeah.
He just sees the accolades of the grind.
Yep.
That's it. So he's like, man, I want to be you. You know, when I was selling cars, man, I always wanted to be a manager until I became a manager. This is crazy. I never get a chance to go home. You know, and I'm looking at salespeople leaving at 5. I'm like, man, why can't I leave when they leave?
And
no.
You're a manager.
You captain of the ship. You got to make sure, you know, and if the ship, and then if y'all not productive, you're the one, in the hot chair, not them.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and after when the old people that have done that, they've been there, they say, man, I'm not going back to that.
I'm trying to go home.
I'm so thankful to God that I learned that lesson early in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a time when I was chasing a promotion like my life depended on it, and I stopped and said, wait a minute, let me refocus. And when I did that, that's when doors started opening up. And, you know, like someone was saying earlier, you know, in this day and age, you know, you're getting 3 job offers. I got 3 job offers, mm-hmm. you know, and they were all jobs that were catering to me spending more time with my family. I mean, it was unheard of. And, you know, it was just God moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was jobs that now, if I was kept on with my little feeble dream, you know, me chasing that little, that extra raise, getting that extra, you know, that extra bump in salary, never would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I would have looked right over that because it wasn't a promotion.
Right.
Good words. That's great words.
Well, what people forget, and what I forgot was, my family is my promotion.
There you go.
There you go.
You know, watching the kids grow. Watching a smile on the wife's face every day instead of a frown. You know, spending time with the neighbors out there in the yard talking trash about your grass. Now my grass over here brown as dirt. I had the best grass out here. And now my grass brown as dirt. I need some rain. But spending time with your buddies, going golfing, fishing.
Mhm. It's important, man.
Doing the things that keeps your body relaxed instead of going all the time for somebody else.
Because
what we don't realize is, unless it's for you, it's your company, you're only making somebody else richer and happier.
Basically.
And they own a boat.
I told you. It's like a prostitution rink.
They just call it in to make sure that the light's still on.
Prostitution rink. What's different? You tell me what's different than what you do than what a hooker does.
Man.
Think about it. Matter of fact, the hooker right now is looking, her position looking a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Man,
you know? I mean, she got more options than we do. Sleep during the day and go to work at night.
Mm-hmm.
She knows she's getting pimped. That's the difference. She's in tune with that she's getting pimped. We still not. We still think, oh, man, we making 6 figures. But they making 7 off of your production.
Look, and they get the raise and the bonus.
You see what I'm saying? We making
they get
6,
the raise,
we making 7. That math don't even work. What we need to do is teach our kids entrepreneurship from the beginning. Go out and make your own cash. Don't depend on nobody.
Right. And I think, and that's where I'm thinking I'm going with this is, listen, you know.
You tell them, go be a doctor, go be a lawyer, go be this, that, and the other. All that entails, in the beginning, working for someone.
Right. We all got to work for someone before we work for themselves.
Bill
Gates did an internship before he quit school and realized what he needed to do.
Yeah, well.
You know, the guy did Facebook. He worked for some other kids that had the idea. And then once he realized he could expand off that.
Yeah, but they were still entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Right.
All of them collectively entrepreneurs just trying to figure out their own way.
They weren't even thinking about making a business. They were just thinking how we could talk in college to each other.
Yeah.
But then they saw the people roll in there. He was like, oh, man, I can make money off this.
Yeah. And see, the thing about that is it doesn't matter who you are to the company. You can be the best employee. You can show up every day, work your fingers to the bone, bloody bones every night, 12 hours a day, every day. If the boss's nephew gets out of college and wants your job, you are out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
You are out of there.
You're out of there. You know what I'm saying? Or somebody that's in the higher ranking just doesn't like you. Maybe because you're always talking about God. You're out of there. So there's really not a whole lot of security when you're doing that. But we have to do it if we have no alternative. But, again, it's like prostitution, man.
We getting pimped all over the place.
We getting pimped. We getting pimped. Pimp slapped. And
yeah.
When you get and when you get divorced from your job, and it's not your divorce, you didn't initiate the divorce, you got pimp slapped.
That's exactly right, man.
Well, I'm glad my pimp let me spend more time with my family now.
There it is. Y'all got to understand it.
Yeah, I got a different pimp.
Now I go to work. I go to work. I sit there, look for another job while I'm at work, do one, two things, and then I sit up here and I'm looking at some of the guys on our teams, and I'm like, what do y'all do all day? They say, we get our work done, we do 2-3 hours, and we sit here for 6, and they get paid.
They'll probably get a promotion.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, wait a minute, you need to come on this other side where we doing work.
Yeah, but you see.
And nobody, they be like, man, you do too much work. I ain't going over there.
Yeah, that's field Negro, house Negro mentality right there. Sometimes, if that's not too deep. Because guess what? When you look at somebody beating the system, because the system's going to beat you. When you look at somebody beating the system, you're like, oh, man, you shouldn't be beating the system. But the system's beating you.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you going to have loyalty to that system? If they're doing something, and I'm not promoting slacking,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, anytime that you can do less and get more.
Yeah, I think that's the way, that's the way you got to do it. You got to work smarter than not harder.
Exactly. Because at the end, you know, they not staying 12, 13 hours, and they still getting paid.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's working smarter.
Good words.
That's good words. And I think that's the end of the night, man.
Yes, sir.
You got to learn how to work smarter, not harder, and keep family first.
Amen.
God and family first. Everything else will fall into place.
Amen.
I learned that this week. I've been learning that. Things are falling into place for me. And it's wild because I told y'all earlier, you know, the wife got this job. Now I'm taking over the kids. Well, this week I put my name out there. Man, I'm getting calls and requests from all over. Like, man, we want you. You know, let us know if this is a good job for you. I got a phone interview on Friday, and the best thing about it is I refinanced the papers. I came home early Monday and saw my refinance papers sitting right outside the door. Approved. So God has lowered my mortgage. And the funny thing was, Tone, I didn't get the chance to tell you this. You know how passionate I am about ball play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And coaches. Well, why did Fred from church offer me the head coaching job for his ninth grade basketball team?
Wow.
Under his system. Because he coaches the high school, you know, the varsity team.
What'd you tell him?
You got to talk to the wife first.
No, I said, man, you know, it's great. I want to look at it. But I told him, I said, you know, it's just, he says the practices would be between 2:30 and 4:30. I guess they get out of high school at 2:30.
Yeah, 2-something, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, wow. And my whole mind was like, this is what I always dreamed and wanted. This is my true dream right here. It's not really owning a business. It's coaching kids in basketball. But the thing was is now I'm thinking, here go my crazy self again, putting myself, how in the world am I going to get from work to do this every single day? And one of the coworkers at work said, you idiot, if you get a job, you can negotiate. And then if you're going to get another manager's job, and this one's a little, it's just not production world, but it's release management. You don't need 8 hours a day. You can set your schedule from 6 to 1, delegate everything, go do your teaching, whatever, and then just come back the next day and see if everything is all right. I said, I never thought of that. So things like that, you know, things happen for a reason. And it's happening to me right now, and I'm just starting to see, like Pastor Wood said, see above water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting
above sea level, above sea level.
Above
sea level.
Yeah,
S-E-E
level.
I understand what his message is saying to me right now.
Yep. Good word.
That you know, you got to look beyond what you're going through right now. There's a whole lot of things God has out there for us, but we don't look beyond where we are.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll end with that. So with that, I'm going to hit the button. If anybody, nobody else has anything, and then we will go to open mic.
Yes, sir.
Oh, next week, before I let this go, we got another great topic and show ready for you next week. We're going to have a quick change. Rodney's going to step in and do next week.
Double duty. No more Mr. Nice Guy.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. So come on and be there, be square.
Deep stuff. I'm getting into that because I told you so mentality.
All right.
We'll see.
All right. All right. Good stuff.
Well, cool. Well, that's the end of our show, guys. Thank you again.
Don't hang up. We got open mic.
Yeah.
Don't hang up. I'm just cutting off this recording, and it's on and popping.